when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, welcome everybody to episode 23 of Prepping 2.0. Today we have Kaz with us. He's going to talk about, among other things, his prepping journey from 1.0 prepping to 2.0 prepping. And I think a lot of folks are going to get a lot out of this. But before we talk about this mythical Kaz fellow, why don't you introduce yourself, sir?
I'm Kaz. I'm the host of the Fourth Dimension channel over on YouTube. I do have a Patreon over on Patreon as well. It's just a backup channel more than anything. And I'm from Ohio, prepping out. I'm about 50 miles outside of Cincinnati, southeast area of Ohio.
Okay, and we're going to talk about this a little more later on, but you're newly married to a woman who is open to prepping, and that is a cool topic. That's probably an entire show in and of itself that we'll do at a later time, but we're going to weave that through because it's critical to everything prepping related is having a supportive spouse. And Shelby would like to tell us about how folks can help the show and how they can contact us.
Absolutely. So people reach out to us on social media all the time. Hey, how do I do this? The best place to kind of reach out to us initially is just check out our website at prepping2-0.com. You can find past episodes there. You can also click on the list we're about to talk about, the top 100 things that will disappear in a collapse. Some of those things are kind of, oh yeah, I could see that happening. And then some of them are like, huh. That makes sense. It's kind of one of those things. I also encourage you to check out each of our author websites. We'll reference our books probably a couple times today. You can reach Glenn at 299days.com. You can reach me at agreatstate.com. Just so you know, book 3 is done. It's in the editor's hands. We're now cleaning it up and making it pretty for you all. It's coming soon. So I also encourage you, people ask me all the time, how do I contact you? If you sign up for our newsletters, you will then have the ability to contact us. I encourage you to do it. And we send a newsletter occasionally. We haven't done one in a while. We should probably do that here soon. Yeah. Another great place to see us too. Let me just throw this out there. Coming up soon, March 30th, there will be the Preparedness Expo in Bremerton, Washington, 9 to 5 at the Baymont Inn and Suites. So from there, let's jump to our list. The number 13 thing that will disappear in a collapse, kind of a big deal, is water containers. Here's the thing, Glenn and I were talking about water containers. They take up an immense amount of space. We're talking about jugs. We're talking about jugs of water to be able to carry water, because water is a primo thing during a collapse, even now, but they're space saving. So you have some thoughts on what to do about that, to ways to store water without, you know, taking up an entire garage of air.
Exactly. And this is for storing water containers. I'm a big fan of Harbor Freight. Yeah, everything's made in China and it may not last as long as like Craftsman tools. I get that. So I know that they have collapsible water jugs, like 5-gallon things that collapse, that gets rid of the air you were talking about, and you can actually store them. I think they're $8. I probably wouldn't take one of those. The handle is maybe going to tear off after, you know, a moderate amount of use. I probably wouldn't use one of those to, I don't know, get in a caravan and walk from Honduras and have George Soros, you know, pay my food and medical care and tell me how to, you know, jump over the border. So I wouldn't make like a long 2,000-mile trek to illegally enter the United States with these water jugs. But they're great for a variety of things. You can collapse, you can get 5 of them, collapse them, put them in a tub. You know, another thing, you mentioned transporting water. And as you can tell from my discussion of the handle, that's kind of a big deal, because if you can't move water from where it is to where you need to be, it's a big problem. I got one of those really good GI 5-gallon water, I call it a water can. It's a plastic thing. It looks like the fuel you know, the jerry cans for fuel, but it's light tan. It's, you know, for water only. You don't want to mix your gasoline containers and your water containers. And then I got an Alice frame, you know, which is a military old school pack, an Alice frame and a couple $2, you know, nylon lashing straps. And I have, and you've seen it, I have a 5 gallon water jug that is really, really durable. It's not a Harbor Freight thing. It's really, really durable. That's on a backpack frame. I think the whole thing was, you know, maybe $80, and you don't need a lot of those. You just need really one of those. And now, can move water around. And by the way, when it comes to who's going to move the water around, I think you and I and the team and others listening are going to have a lot of things going on that you need to do other than haul water around. So you're going to have all these people, like, you know, in our situation, we have kids and things like that. These backpack water or water backpack things that you make yourself are great for having a job for a lot of people to do that are going to be sitting around. Because if I'm going to be doing 12 or 20 hour, you know, patrols and looking for bad guys, I really don't want to be hauling water. I think that's a terrible idea. So that's a great thing to think about. How are you going to move this water? So those are some of our thoughts on water containers.
Awesome. So that's, that was a very good prepping 1.0 to 2.0 sort of thing. So I want to jump right into our awesome guest today, Kaz. Kaz, tell us your journey. We've gotten to know you a little bit, but our readers and our listeners haven't. So tell us your journey from 1.0 to 2.0.
I've had an interesting go at this whole thing. Mine really, I guess you could take it, I could take it all the way back to September 11th, 2001, as a lot of people of I guess, that are in their 40s now, some of us that are dating ourselves, can relate to. You know, I was in my early 20s when that happened, and I grew up on a farm and stuff, so I wasn't really used to having to think about things, you know, globally or internationally or collapse or civilization or everything. And that experience was kind of what started my mind on this journey of I need to do something. That day, as I'm sure most people remember, was a bit chaotic, depending on your situation. You know, I think most people remember where they were at when that happened, if they were alive. I know there's a lot of people who weren't even born at that point when that happened. I know that's kind of weird to think about, but I remember the situations and seeing gas stations, people freaking out, like, and, you know, and being unprepared myself, having half a tank of gas, and I didn't even have a firearm at the time, and thinking, this is not good, you know. As we all know, how that situation worked out in the long run. But that started the mindset of I need to think about things a little differently. Then as things progressed and, you know, we seen the election of certain administrations coming into power, and we seen the mindset start to shift left, and the way the country had started to polarize, it forced me to, again, readjust my mindset of, you know, everything is not okay. This is not normal. Something's wrong, really, is when it started. And then I guess it was about 2008, about 2010, I had gotten married and had a family of my own at that point. And I had to, again, you know, readjust my mindset for, oh, I have a family now I have to take care of. And I live in a rural area, so it forced me to, you know, look at things a little differently. Then there was a minor, I say minor, but it was a major for us at the time. It was a weather-related incident that took power out down here for about 2 weeks. You know, and we had no heat, no way to cook things and stuff. But fortunately, my mindset was a little more prepared at that point that I was thinking. So that was kind of my prepper 1.0 version of this, where I had some skills and I had some abilities and some things put around and stockpiled to be able to mitigate and some of the inconveniences of no power for 2 weeks. The 2.0 started, I would say the transitions really started from about 2012, when after the Sandy Hook and the gun ban started, and there was a real push and again, polarization in the country. I realized I've got to step this thing up. I had, at the time, my ex-wife had, you know, two small children. It was myself, and we, you know, I had to provide and think about them. Think about their safety and their security. We didn't know where things were going to go at the time. I started getting involved with some or preparedness organization groups, community defense groups. I'm not going to use the dirty M word yep. as the media likes to twist that. But, you know, preparedness groups and that type of thing. And with that push. And then when eventually, you know, I was involved in some rallies and open carry marches, you know, with the Tea Party and that kind of thing, bringing my politics into play a little bit. But of course, you know, that plays into some of the prepping to a certain extent. But at that point, it was kind of one of those, okay, I'm really going to take this seriously. It's time to consider, you know, what is the reality? How many months of food does it take to survive? You know, what food stores do I have? What type of firearms do I have? How much ammunition do I have? Starting looking at the logistical side of things, starting to look at the tactical and strategic side of prepping, and then start, you know, looking at groups and having other people involved. And I think that was where the transition happened. So come about 2015, I felt pretty good about the way where I sat, but I was really preparing for another administration to come into power that could have tipped the scales completely to the other side. So I was heavily into prepping at that point. And I think that was pretty much, you know, when I would have classified that 2.0 prepper, which I think is a great terminology use for you guys, that you start out just thinking small and then eventually it goes to a lifestyle, the 2.0 lifestyle.
Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's okay. That's pretty much it in a nutshell.
What I, as I sit here and listen to what you say, and it's very similar to my journey, and I think Shelby's journey too. But what I, as I listen, you know, you're talking about, you started taking this seriously. It was a mindset. You started thinking about logistical things and groups and community. And I made a note to myself, no stuff. What you didn't say was, oh yeah, and I got serious, so I bought a flamethrower, and I bought a bunch of landmines, and I bought 700,000 MREs. You know what I mean? And I love this because that is truly, you know, the 2.0 approach to this is thinking about things like logistics instead of just buying stuff. I love that, and I just wanted to amplify. It was kind of an experiment with me. I was like, well, let's see what he says. I bet he doesn't say anything about stuff, and sure enough, that's what happened, because it truly is the mindset and thinking about the larger picture than just you and maybe a couple people around you. Yeah. So now you're a 2.0-er. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. I think when it gets to this point, it's not about I think 1.0 is buying stuff. I think you start out buying stuff. Everybody does. Everybody I've ever talked to that's into prepping or disaster preparedness, it all starts with, oh, I'm buying gear, I'm buying food, I'm buying tactical stuff. But then there's the evolution. At some point, I don't know really when that switch flips, that you say, there's more to this. There is, you know, thinking about the perimeter security, thinking about your 10-mile radius, as we like to say in our little groups. You know, the people around you, thinking about the community, you know, those types of things is when I think there's a transition there at some point. It's less about the stuff and more about the skill set and mindset.
I also noticed that your time frame was very similar to mine and Shelby's. And quite honestly, everyone I've spoken to about this or listened to about this, it's usually that same, you know, chronology. And now we're getting into the 2.0 stuff. Well, any other thoughts on the journey from 1.0 to 2.0?
I think a lot of it is just reading and learning. You know, I say on my channel, you know, my tagline on the channel is knowledge. because that's something no one can ever take away from you. They can take away all of your stuff, all of your gear, all of your guns, all of your stuff. But what you know, no one can ever take that from you. And that actually come from my great grandmother who was who lived through the Depression. And the stuff is just one part of it. You know, what you learn and being able to having the skills that you learn can make up for your stuff.
Very cool. I love this because I think that when I think about the Depression era folks, and I've talked to Glenn about this, and I know it applies to me as well. It's funny how our grandparents and we hearken back to those days because that was a generation that lived prepping. They had to. They lived out a catastrophe in a way. So amazing. Amazing people that I'm so glad that we take a moment and thank them, that generation, that World War II Depression era. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's an amazing generation. Okay, so we're going to get out of our reflective mode here. I do want to just touch on this, but again, I don't want to spend too much time on it, Kaz, because again, we've talked about this. I really want to spend a whole show on this. I want to give it more than just 3 minutes, but just in a nutshell summary sort of thing, what are your thoughts on marriage and specifically, and you're on a second marriage now, by the way, congratulations, recently remarried, women in prepping, just give us some initial thoughts on this. And again, we're going to have a long conversation about this on another show. And people ask us for this all the time. Tell us about this because there's a lot of people in our boats where we're now in a second marriage. And that's a tragedy in and of itself. Nobody goes into a marriage going, hey, we're going to do this another time sometime in our lifetime because this is fun, right? But marriage, women in prepping, give us I'm going to leave you a wide open question there. Tell us your thoughts.
I mentioned this when we talked about it. I was married to Elisa, and now I have a Julie.
Yay!
Okay, so let me just, for those of you listeners who don't know, Lisa is a character in Glenn Tate's books, who is the main character, Grant Matson's wife, who is very hostile to prepping. Julia's main character in my books, who is a city girl, with a prepping mindset. She doesn't have a lot of stuff, but she's like, I got to learn this stuff. So yeah, there you go. So keep going. Tell us more about your Lisa and your Julie.
I guess to sum it up, like you said, in a nutshell, is marriage and prepping and your spouse can either be your greatest asset or one of your biggest detriments. Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate to say. They can be, again, my now wife is a fantastic, I can't go on enough about how supportive and thoughtful she is when it comes to preparedness and to the mindset of we need to take care of ourselves versus the other mindset of I'm going to obstruct and kind of fight you along the way because I think that this is stupid and the normalcy bias, nothing will ever happen kind of thing. Even when something happens and she's living through it, still says that it'll be okay. You know, they're going to come to save us. That normalcy bias that some people live in that's so deep and so ingrained, they can't recognize the forest for the trees, you know.
Wow.
And I think that's really kind of the biggest asset. They're the biggest asset to you. It's such a great dynamic and it can be such a positive thing, having someone who's supportive in your life, you know, when it comes to marriage and that type of thing and having that same mindset.
Awesome. And now I hope after everyone just heard Kaz's explanation, do you see why I want to spend a whole show on that? We could just unpeel that in several layers. So we're going to just leave you with that little tantalizing nugget. And go on to the next thing. This is what I was kind of excited about. And we're going to probably get this topic started, and go into our second half with this. But I was talking to Kaz earlier. He's from, you heard him say, in Ohio, the Cincinnati area. And this is one of the things I'm so proud of that I brought out. I really wanted to, and it's kind of subtle in book two, where I talk about riots in Cincinnati. And the reason why, I describe some riots, and I describe them, they're horrific, they're awful, they're gross. And then what happens afterwards is that nobody, in places around the country, nobody's heard about. Did you know there were riots in Cincinnati? What, did you hear about? They were violent? People died? What? So, and this is kind of what we wanted to touch about a little bit today, because this is where our country is going currently, in that we only hear, I don't know what's going on in New York City today. I don't know if there's something violent happening. And it's only if the media chooses to put it on my national news do I hear it. And what's scary to think about, there are some major, major events that really we should know about that we don't, because the media is the picky and the choosy of those. So tell us about Cincinnati. I mean, I know about Cincinnati, but you've been there. And this is, and I, what I want is, as people are listening to your description, if you live in the South, you need to know what's happening in Cincinnati. If I'm living on the West Coast, I want to know what's happening in Cincinnati, and vice versa. You want to know what's happening with Antifa here, right, Kaz? Because they're going to, I can tell you right now, they're growing in Cincinnati, because it's a great little petri dish for them to grow, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is actually an Antifa action arm here in Cincinnati that I found their little webpage and whatnot, but I'm not going to go into that. So, sure. the Cincinnati area, the people who are local and are of my age will remember the riots that we had here in 2001 when there was a police shooting of an unarmed kid. And without going into the details of all of that, it caused, you know, civil disturbance, civil unrest, riots. It really did. I was unfortunate enough to be downtown when that happened. And the police had areas cordoned off. It was happening over a weekend and went into a Monday, and it had settled down, and the police thought it was kind of over. So they sent us, they let us go through. They had the area blocked off. We were trying to go, again, I was in my 20s. I would date myself here. And we were going to a club. You know, I was in college at the time, and we were like, oh, there's a club up here, blah, blah, blah. We want to go hang out. Well, the cops said, sure, go ahead, guinea pigs. So I don't really wanted to bring race into it, but it absolutely was racial, you know, again, polarization at the time. But so, hey, let's send a carload of white kids up here into this neighborhood with that just happens to be, you know, urban, diverse, however you want to put that. Let's see what happens.
Jeez.
So needless to say, we were assaulted. They were throwing bricks and rocks and everything else. And I wasn't driving. I was in the back seat. And of course, we were unarmed. We were in a gun-free zone. Remember, hey, gun-free zone. In our early 20s, a bunch of kids didn't have no idea of what was going on. And basically, the car got, you know, rocks and stuff, hit with rocks, and one of the windows busted out. And we actually ran several stoplights to get out of the area, fleeing, literally fleeing for your life. It was pretty terrifying. It was myself and my cousin and his girlfriend at the time. And it was actually very scary. And that, again, another eye-opening experience. I've had a lot of these in my life. And I think people who live through these types of things, they have a tendency to become more prepper-oriented or prepper-minded. But yeah, there is a significant, and a lot of that news never made national news. So
exactly.
I thought that was interesting, that people didn't know about it. You know, I bring it up now, like, oh yeah, do you know there was riots back in Cincinnati in 2001, right? People look at you like, what? I've never heard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let me stop you right there, because we have about a few seconds here before we have to take a quick break. But I want to ask you questions about this. And don't go away, folks. This is fascinating stuff. And there's lessons that we can learn from this. So hang tight with us. Join us on the other side of the break.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Hello, folks. Shelby Gallagher here, wanting to let you know about a great event coming up, the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. It's on Saturday, March 30th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton, Washington.
It's going to be great. This is Glenn Tate here. We're going to have John Jacob Schmidt speaking, Representative Matt Shea, simulcast on 1400 AM KITZ Radio. Look for us on Facebook, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo 2019. Come on out and see us.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MX-T100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required and no test needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always-ready, always-charged grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60 Ah internal battery, the operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple, one-button communication when it counts. Our 2-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up. To learn more, go online to portableuniversalpower.com.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. Shelby Gallagher here, and we have our guest with us today, Kaz from Ohio. We were just talking about some violent riots that happened in 2001 that Kaz found himself in the middle of, unsuspectingly, yet encouraged to be there, unfortunately. So I want to ask you about that, because I think this is important, is that I'm going to tell you right now, living here on the West Coast, didn't hear squat about that, and probably should have, with things like that that get dangerous. And I know that sometimes the media is like, well, we don't want to talk about it because we don't want to inflame people and have them spread to other places, whatever. Those days are over. I think there's enough political things that happen with riots that it's like, why let a good crisis go to waste? Let's grow this chaos if we want. But let's go back to that moment when you were in there. Have you ever had thoughts go through your mind, Cass? And I think this is something that just humbles me when I think about this. That had that gone any further south, how much danger were you in, do you think?
Oh, we were in significant danger. There's no question about it. Again, you know, I was in my early 20s. I was the equivalent of a millennial at that time. Even though I had grown up on a farm, I had never experienced violence like that. Of course, you know, been in fist fights, you know, kids growing up, boys, you know, we fight, whatever. But I had never been in experienced the kind of violence where people wanted to kill you at that point in my life. For no other reason than I was a white guy in the wrong place. You know, we were the targets of their rage. And it was, I would say, you know, had we not really just stepped on the gas and said, let's get out of here. And that was the G-rated version of some of the language that was used. but yeah, you know, and ran lights and, you know, the rules go out the window at that point. Self-preservation comes in a fight or flight kind of thing. Had it gone any worse, you know, it was obvious that the police were not interjecting on our behalf at that point. You know, and honestly, after we got out of the area, we stopped and talked to the officer, and the officers were pretty much like, oh, well, we didn't know if that was going to happen, but it was like really nonchalant about it. Which again formed another view I have of some law enforcement. But you know, again, preservation, self-preservation. And, you know, you hear these types of things. And what was funny is it was local news, but it wasn't, you know, national. And to take into account, though, this is 2001, this is before, correct, you know, 24/7 media, 24/7 bombarding of, you know, the 24-hour news cycle. It was before social media. There was no Facebook. I didn't even think MySpace was available at the time. You know, there was no internet. The connectivity wasn't there. So I take that into account when I say this. But I think now in that situation is like you said, no good crisis goes to waste. I really think that it would definitely have been used for the agenda, for no question. No question.
Absolutely. So I have a follow-up question, and I know Glenn has one for you. So I want our listeners, when they're listening to this, this is one of those things where it's prepping mindset comes in over stuff. I've seen footage of people in the middle of the riots that I talk about a lot on social media, the riots that happen regularly in Portland, Oregon. They happen a lot in Seattle and San Francisco as well, but they're allowed to happen regularly in Portland. And you have these people that get out of their car to try and reason with, you know, the person throwing a brick at you. They try to, hey, stop it, you're being mean, sort of stuff. I want to encourage people to learn a lesson from Cass here. When you have that, if you find yourself in the middle of one of these things, look around. What are your tools? The tool you had at the time, you probably have more now, is your vehicle. Use it and get to safety. That's like just situational awareness. Get yourself to safety and go from there. So even though you said you weren't carrying firearms, you probably these days wouldn't even find yourself in that situation because you're an older, wiser man. But, you know, and we can teach our kids this. You find yourself in this situation, get out, run red lights, run the stop signs, get the take the ticket. It's worth saving your lives. So exactly. Don't stop and, hey, let's take the bus. Let's call Uber. You know, let's check Snapchat or Twitter and see what's going on here. You know, no, get out. So those are that's just kind of my thought. I'm sure you would agree with me. But Glenn over here has a question and I'll let you two have a chat here.
Yeah, Cass, I find this interesting. It's pretty clear that this riot had quite an impact on you. I don't find that interesting. I find that normal and completely understandable, right? So these riots that you're experiencing with your cousin and his then girlfriend affects you deeply. And I love your observation about the fact that the police were kind of nonchalant and it was pretty clear to you that you couldn't count on them. So here's my question. Your cousin and his then girlfriend, did it affect them in the same way? I mean, did they become preppers? And if not, why do you think that is? Was it sort of like it resonated with Kaz, or does this kind of thing resonate with most people?
It definitely resonated with them. They actually are preppers as well. what was ironic, or I don't want to say ironic, but she was driving. And her instinct, my cousin at the time, he was a Marine, had just gotten out of the Marines, shortly before this happened. And, I was in the back seat, he was in the front seat with her, she was driving. Her instinct was to stop. Her initial instinct was to stop and get out of the car. His instinct and my instinct were, we're yelling at her, Mesh, go, 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 just go, just go, just go. And she actually said this, and I'll never forget it, but the light is red.
Normalcy bias.
Thank you. I was hoping you would chime in with that. But yeah, so she totally was like, the light is red. And we're like, you know, obviously we're like, we don't care. Just go, get out, you know. And when the window, the big brick come through the side of the window at that point, you know, it was one of them. She actually stepped on it. And like I said, we ran like two red lights, got two city blocks out. And then made a right and found our way out of the area and ran into the police at that point. But yeah, so it affected them to their core. My cousin, who's now remarried to someone else, he is a prepper as well. In fact, he's in our group. And same situation, you know, it makes an indelible mark on who you are and changes your mindset for sure.
One of the reasons I think that the general population doesn't prep, there are many reasons for it, but one of those reasons is not everybody has had life experiences like you've had trying to outrun a riot. I've had different bad life experiences in which I realized that nobody was going to come and help me. And I had to, for example, take a dog collar as a kid and turn it into an improvised weapon and those sorts of things. But I think that most people don't have these experiences here in pleasant lovely peacetime America where everything is just snazzy and neat. And so I'm going to give the general population a little bit of a break for not having those experiences. But what I will not tolerate from the general population is when they, who have not had these experiences, look at people like you, me, and Shelby and infer that we're some kind of weirdos. Hey, you don't know what it's like to be scared for your life. That tip of your tongue tingles with the adrenaline, and then you have the adrenaline crash. If you've never experienced that, you are in no position to tell me or Shelby or Kaz that we're, quote, overreacting. Anyway, I just felt really good saying that. Thank you, Kaz, for indulging me.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. You know, I've had several experiences like that, you know, from being shot at to, you know, riots, things like that. And it is, it definitely changes your perspective. And I talk about on my YouTube channel a little bit at times about the thin veneer that we live in and how it is a very thin veneer of civil society, civilization. And you think about people, that word civil comes into a lot of things. We act civilly and we live in a civilization and we're civilized human beings. That word is just a word, and it is very, very thin to the violence and horror that lies underneath it that people just don't see and refuse to recognize.
So let me ask you this. So, and you've just kind of created a good segue for me. And you talked about it earlier, and you and I had a chance to talk about it as well. And tie into us also your YouTube channel, because I know you talk about this. So you mentioned the 2-week power outage that you guys experienced recently. And was it recently? In the recent past. And what you, the devolving of the pristine conditions and what you saw during that time. This is just 2 weeks of power outage, folks. This isn't, you know, this isn't a collapse. This isn't, you know, war. This isn't really, you know, what we see in some on some of our international news. This is just a simple 2-week power outage. And listen to what Kaz had, what he saw during that time. This is crazy, crazy stuff.
Sure. This was, I think it was like 2003, 2004. It was a dry hurricane that came through our area. It was Hurricane Hugo, and it knocked out power in the Cincinnati, Dayton area. And at the time, I was working private security. I was doing armed alarm responses for a private company that basically did the, hey, we were the ADT guys, essentially, you know, your home alarm, business alarm goes off, and we're there to investigate and sweep and clear areas, you know, and we're armed and all that kind of stuff. We were on a, I was working third shift, and I was working in Dayton. I was working with Dayton PD at the time, responding to these calls. And we were on a 24-hour backlog of calls. So you dial 911 or your alarm system on your home security goes off. It was 24 hours minimum before somebody showed up to say, is everybody still alive? I mean, and really that was kind of the case. You know, there were some places we went to, the businesses were burglarized, you know, breaking and entering and that kind of thing, where stuff was just torn apart and whatever, but it was 24 hours. So all of your technology, you know, your home security systems, your internet, all that was down. There was no internet. There was no, you know, gas stations weren't working. We seen people, you know, arguing and fighting at gas stations because the pumps weren't working. Your credit cards didn't work. There were grocery stores obviously couldn't process things. And in a matter of about 24 hours from when it happened, I think a de-evolution of things from that thin civil veneer of people are going about their day to now I can't buy groceries, I can't get gas, I can't do anything, I have no heat. It wasn't warm either. I believe it wasn't around March. So it wasn't warm, but it fortunately wasn't freezing either. But again, it was cold. So your heat wasn't working. There was a lot of, you know, things, of course. And from a personal standpoint, I had two small children at the house that I had to try and take care of, but I had a job to go do too. So there's a whole nother video set for you. But yeah, so the de-evolution of, I watched Dayton kind of devolve because trees were down. They had knocked out power, blown out. Fire crews couldn't respond to fires. It was taking longer for them to get there because of, you know, powers, roads being blocked, live wires laying across the road. Those were all over the place. You know, the biggest thing that struck me, though, was I remember there is a without going into names and stuff, there's a certain plant in Dayton that does paper recycling. And I remember doing an alarm response on that building and hearing like a block over, you know, shots being fired and screams. And we're talking about 24 hours. So, you know, from one night things being, okay, to the next night, the S was kind of HTFing there, if you will.
radio friendly. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, it really was starting to devolve. And, you know, fortunately, to the credit of the utility services in Dayton, Dayton Light and Power and them, those guys, I tell you, I got a lot of respect for them because they went into some areas that I wasn't going to go in without my long gun and my body armor to put up to fix these power lines and do things. Of course, you know, there was police escorts and stuff, but that also goes to show that the resources are finite for your city, local, state government, and those resources are going to be allocated to certain areas. And guess what? Your safety, your personal safety is not one of them. And that's something that people need to think about, you know, and again, the evolution from 1.0 prepping to 2.0, all it takes is some experience like this and you'll start to evolve.
Very cool. So this is so awesome because you've been doing this for so long. And again, and thank you so much, because that's what I wanted people to hear, is that it is within just a few hours, things can go from, okay, this little tense, you know, it's a little cold, a little hungry maybe, to, we got to carry a long arm or long firearm to, long rifle to, for safety's sake. And you're going to hear gunfire and the police are tapped out and 24 hour call response from law enforcement and from security services. That's within 24 to 48 hours after just a bad storm and no electrical. Imagine what it could be if the system were stressed even more. So love hearing those stories because people learn from that. I know I do. So what I really, the next thing I'd like to talk about, we have several minutes we could talk about this. YouTube, how long, you have a YouTube channel, you've been doing it for a while. What are the topics you talk about there? Oh, and the other thing, not only that, so give us a little quick overview there. And this is something we all have to worry about, those of us who have, you know, radio shows, podcasts, websites, have a social media presence. Deplatforming, that's kind of a big deal. Talk about that for us for a second.
Oh, wow. So my YouTube channel, I go into a lot of things. I carry a lot of unpopular opinions, but then a lot of popular opinions. A shout out to my YouTube subscribers. I have some really fantastic subscribers who have a very lot of thoughtful comments and a lot of knowledge themselves, and I learn a lot from them. YouTube has been, it's been a really amazing thing for me to evolve as a prepper as well. And taking the things that I learned from YouTube and passing them on to my own channel, and then taking the things that I learn on my own and passing it on, the information. It's been a fantastic community. I can't stress that enough. And it is really, I think it's really pushed me even further to evolve as a prepper and as a person. I think, you know, I get a lot of perspectives from that I wouldn't necessarily get from people from all over the planet. It's been amazing. I've made some fantastic friends, the people that I would have never talked to prior to YouTube, out in all over the country, California, Arizona, Illinois, New York, just literally all over the country, all over the world. I have subscribers in Germany, in Australia, which is really kind of, amazing if you think about it, you know, that in a matter of, 10, 15 years that we go from barely having communications next door to now you can talk to people all over the world. The YouTube channel, Fourth Dimension, that the whole name kind of evolved. It used to just, I don't even remember what my first name was. I changed it basically because I thought the fourth dimension, we live in a three-dimensional world, but the fourth dimension being time and space. And that's kind of, again, the evolution of things that you have to think about things differently, not when it comes to prepping, especially. That's kind of where, that fourth dimension, as far as the deep platforming thing goes, I tell you, that's been a struggle we're all dealing with, all the YouTube community. I know a lot of people are going over to BitChute, and a lot of people are going over to Steemit. A lot of people are going over to various platforms, Patreon, But, you know, as we've seen the agenda, the tech agenda evolve, it's making it harder and harder for channels to survive. You know, you start seeing like the adpocalypse on YouTube that hit a lot of us. I don't really use my channel for ad revenue as much as I did more for informational purposes. So that didn't really affect me too much, although it is very frustrating when you see all of your videos being shadow banned and whatnot. As far as taking steps for a possible deplatforming, you know, the only thing I really did is just kind of back up my videos on a T drive here at home. And then if I have to launch another channel, then I will. I got my Patreon that I can just start, you know, posting directly to Patreon. And then if it goes down, I guess I would have to find a platform. But, you know, we're not going to go away without a fight, I guess is what it boils down to. I wish I had a better answer for you, but that's been an ongoing. I've talked to various other YouTubers, John and Prepared Mind and Backcountry and some other ones. And we're all kind of in the same boat here.
Yeah, and so are we. We've had the same discussions and thoughts. By the way, it's Fourth Dimension number 4, Fourth Dimension. It's not spelled out. And then and your Patreon channel. And when we get done recording this, Shelby and I are going to get on and be Patreon supporters. You're a supporter of us, and we need to do this. We need to help each other out. I mean, I'm going to get some cool content. You know, you mentioned you learned so much from doing a show, and boy, oh, howdies, can Shelby and I agree with that and put an exclamation point after that. It's been amazing. I don't even know why we end up learning so much, but we're constantly thinking about these topics. Maybe that's what it is. We don't have an opportunity to go and get caught up in, you know, the Final Four college basketball things or whatever, because we have a show to record and we have Kaz, and let's call him and find out what topics we're going to talk about. So maybe that's it. But the amount of stuff you learn, and not just stuff that is in your comfort zone, you take in so much and you learn so much. And one of the things, I'm curious what you think about this. One of the things that Shelby and I, what's driven us to do this show and a couple other things is getting a message out. People ask, you know, when was it that you guys decided to have a podcast? And now we call it a show because we're on the radio too. When did you decide to do this? Like, we had some big sit-down meeting at the kitchen table and got a whiteboard out and said, well, what are the pros and the cons? It didn't happen that way. It was, we have stuff to talk about. We were on John Jeffers' show, The Jeffers Brief, on Contra Radio Network. And he said, you guys should do a show. It's not as hard as you think it is. And we went, oh, geez, we could do that. And then, of course, we get our awesome producer, Gator, involved, who does a magnificent professional job on this stuff. And anyway, but my point is I think, Kaz, you're probably like us, it was about getting a message out. And it's not about, you know, being a media mogul or being a personality or a celebrity. I mean, you don't even use your real name for the most part. We certainly don't use our real name. This isn't for vanity. This isn't for ego. I think it's about getting the message out. And now, even with deplatforming problems that we need to have workarounds for, this internet age, this is the golden age of being able to talk to anyone on the planet, provided they can, you know, find out about you and know what YouTube channel to subscribe to, or if you're like us, you're on iTunes and Podbean and you can subscribe there. So, you know, did you do this to be a star, or did you do this to get the message out? Objection, leading question.
Definitely not. I never anticipated my channel to do what it's done. And it's a very small channel. But here I am on a radio show with you guys. I never would have guessed that would have happened. I did it really to, I started out as fun. My channel actually goes back to like 1990 something. I'm going to date it, early YouTube era. And I started it when I used to play football. I played, you know, a little bit of football, semi-pro and some things. But yeah, that was all it was for. And then it turned into, as my obviously interests shift, I thought, well, hey, let's do a video about some of our bug out type of training, right? And then when I shifted gears over to, use your guys' phrase, 2.0 is when I started shifting it more towards this information is good. The YouTube channel, really, it wasn't a celebrity kind of thing. It was more about passing along the information. I felt that, you know, some of the experiences that I had and some of the information that I had was valuable stuff, you know, from growing up on a farm to security experience, to my limited military experience, to, wow, just prepping and having a family and dealing with that M word and the groups and things that I've learned from them, and politics, learning things about politics and being involved with some political organizations. Some of the things that I've learned, I felt it was good information, and be able to convey that, hopefully convey that in a way that people could grasp and understand, and that would work for them. Something that they would be able to maybe take something out of. It was never about celebrity or money or fame or any of that. It was just really about information, to be honest.
Well, yeah, and that mirrors what we did. And there's not a lot of fame and money in YouTubing and podcasting and radio shows, to be quite honest. You have to love this. This has to be a labor of love. And it certainly is for us, and I know it is for you.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely definitely not.
That's right. So it's Fourth Dimension with a number 4 TH dimension, and there's a Patreon support thing. In about 10-15 seconds, tell people how important Patreon is to getting shows done.
It's really been a lifesaver, at least, you know, on my end. YouTube, with their deplatforming and banning and stuff, people can always go over all my videos are put over there. So regardless of whether you get a notification or not, YouTube's been notorious for wreaking havoc with notifications. I get those messages. Hey, I didn't get notified. Those videos are always put over on Patreon.
Yeah. So, hey, Kerncast, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to take folks out of the regular show. Stick around for the after show, because we're going to talk with Kaz about the future of America and CW2, that Civil War II amping up and all that. Shelby, thoughts?
Best quote from Benjamin Franklin: failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.